Today on The Independent, Pete and I talk about the loss of offensive coordinator Jared Parker to Troy and where Marcus Freeman and the Notre Dame staff goes from here.
Welcome to The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, The Athletic, joined by my colleague and co-host Matt Fortuna of The Inside Zone. And I don't know if this qualifies as an emergency podcast, but for the second time in a calendar year, a Notre Dame offensive coordinator is leaving for the state of Alabama.
I didn't even think of that. Second time in as many weeks, we have a quasi-emergency podcast, one of which we had to record twice because we knew that news was coming, Riley Leonard. This one a little more surprising. And apologies to our listenership. Got a lot of tweets. Where's the emergency podcast? I was traveling all day today. I did kind of anticipate this news coming today. But it's still very, very big and sounds pretty positive, frankly, by reading the Notre Dame fan base right now. I mean, there were a lot of people upset when Marcus Freeman came out after the Stanford game and said he wants everyone back. People were even more upset a day later when he went back on those comments and fired Chancey Stuckey. And I was told repeatedly from that day forward by anyone inside that building, we're really hoping Jared Parker gets a Group of Five head coaching job. And I, God's honest truth, did everything I could to not laugh at them when they said that. But here he is. He's got one. You want to look at the last 8 Notre Dame offense coordinators. Only two of them got demoted or fired. And one of them, they're probably going to try to hire back right now because he's probably had best career of all of them since, and that's Mike Denbrock taking Cincinnati to the playoff and coaching the Heisman winner at LSU this year. But boy, don't tell me that this isn't a great place to work, man. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, God bless Jared Parker. He's a nice guy. There's a reason everyone was calling for his head at the end of the year, and he's now got a really good Group of Five head coaching job off a year that statistically, yes, was very strong, but I think anyone who watched him play this year came away very underwhelmed with that offensive operation. And much like Mike Samford, who went 4-8 as an offense coordinator who didn't even call plays there and got the Western Kentucky head job, another Notre Dame coordinator is getting a good head coaching job. But it's a great place to work, and they're going to pay. And they're hopefully going to have a real search this time. And maybe this staff, this regime gets a new lease on life, so to speak. Not that anything was in peril, but there was going to be a hell of a lot of pressure on Marcus Freeman going into year three, especially had he stuck by or because he wanted to stick by the guy who everyone was calling for his job for. Another chance to make a hire. The third offense coordinator in 3 years under Marcus Freeman, only a second of which he will hire himself. But the drama continues in South Bend. The very last head coach opening, of course.
Right. Until. And look, Riley Leonard also from Alabama, if we want to get technical.
That's right.
It's the center of the Notre Dame football universe right now. But it's I had heard much the same from you over the last 3 weeks that there was a hope, and I wouldn't say an expectation, but a hope that Jared Parker would find a head coaching job, which sort of got me thinking back to, like, there have been Notre Dame coaches who have gotten head coaching jobs, who needed to get head coaching jobs due to sort of the perilous nature of their position there. I think Jared Parker was not there. But I 100% agree with you that, like, not that it resets the clock on Marcus Freeman, but I do think it turns down the temperature a lot on sort of how he's viewed by the fan base. Like, even though this decision in some ways was made for him, it sort of counts the same in terms of, all right, you've got Riley Leonard coming in, especially if you hire Mike Denbrock to be your next offensive coordinator, or at least someone just more established from outside your immediate coaching tree. And I realize Mike Denbrock and Marcus Freeman were at Cincinnati together. Mike Denbrock obviously was at Notre Dame for two tours of duty under Brian Kelly and Tyrone Willingham. I mean, look, he was here when he coached a friend of the pod, Ryan Harris, and, you know, Brady Quinn was on those teams. But if you hired Mike Denbrock to sort of knit the staff together, he's worked with a really good dual threat quarterback this last year, who was not a really good dual threat quarterback before he got to LSU. They had the number one offense in the country in scoring, yards per carry, pass efficiency and yards per play. I mean, it was a clean sweep down there. And I realized they had to play a certain brand of football because their defense stunk. But Mike Denbrock has gotten to a place in his career where I would equate him to maybe a slightly more personable Al Golden. He's seen
more than slightly. He might be one of the most personable guys I've ever covered in Notre Dame.
He's seen stuff. Like, he's seen game plans go sideways and adjusted. He's coached through a shitstorm before and come out the other side and live to tell the tale. Like, I mean, he was here in Notre Dame in 2016. That's going to be a hell of a lot worse than whatever Notre Dame looks like, hopefully for the duration of Marcus Freeman's tenure. And like, I think he has an appreciation. He's one, I think he's a native of Homer, Michigan, which is basically 2 hours northeast of here. So he's local to this area. And like, he gets Notre Dame. I would say, I was kind of running through the staff in my mind, like, who on Notre Dame's current coaching staff understands Notre Dame better than Mike Denbrock?
None. I don't think
nobody
would even be possible, unless maybe Tommy Reese was still there.
Yeah, just like nobody would get it like he gets it. And I think there's everything that I just listed off would be a valuable asset for Marcus Freeman to have on his staff. And that's, you know, it's weird to think, like, a year ago, if you had put Mike Denbrock on a replacement for Tommy Reese list and described him as a home run, people would be like, what the hell are you talking about? But
took Cincy to the playoff. That's not
nothing. But it just, like, there wasn't, sizzling name, right? And it's weird to say Mike Denbrock is like Mike Denbrock, hot offensive coordinator candidate, because he's like the most like everyman guy out there. He's like abnormally normal for the profession, which is just, he's a delight. But
he's a more normal speed Chuck Martin.
Yes, he is not. He does not live life on podcast setting 2.0.
Correct.
He listens to his podcast at normal speed. That's Mike Denbrock.
So
I think it'd be a great hire.
So that gets to my question, Pete. We're seven and some change minutes into the show, and we're already talking about Mike Denbrock. Is this realistic? Is it possible? He is said to have just re-upped with LSU for a 3-year deal after Texas A&M and Mike Elko made a run at him. Is this realistic? And I don't see it in the sense, can they afford him? Like, is it even like,
I think,
how would that logistically work, assuming the ink is dry on that extension?
I would describe it as it's realistic in the make him say no. Like, and I'm like, Ryan Grubb at Washington is an incredible offensive coordinator, but that's not even a realistic make him say no candidate. Like, Mike Denbrock would be my number one candidate that's realistic, and that I would force the issue and make him say no.
Well, Grubb re-upped last. So Grubb was, I believe, in Alabama. I know he was talking to Nick Saban.
Yeah, that was the guy that could have stopped the whole Tommy Reese cascade to Alabama.
And he stayed at Washington. I want to say he signed on for 2+ to stay. I assume it was a 3-year extension. I don't know that. But all of which is to say, it would be cheaper to buy him out than it would be to buy Mike Denbrock out. And look, 9 times out of 10, I'll say money's not an option with Notre Dame. When they want their guy, they'll get their guy at OC.
Money's not an option or not an object?
Not an obstacle. last year it was. So we find ourselves in this weird place here where we're talking about this thing in relation to last year, in which everything that could have possibly gone wrong went wrong. Do they learn their lessons from that? Do they overcompensate in light of that and just throw a blank check at whoever they want and pay whatever the buyout is? I just, like, if Mike Denbrock stayed at LSU over A&M, not that I expect him to jump to A&M, but if he signed a 3-year extension to tie himself to Brian Kelly in that place, I don't have the contract in front of me. I don't think it's publicly available yet. There's no way that's for anything less than 2 point something, which would cost an arm and a leg to get out of if you want to hire him. And I'm not saying don't do that if you're Notre Dame. Again, easy for me to say, it's not my money. But is it, you got to be all in on that guy if that's where you want to go and what you want to do.
Yeah.
And
does it not check so many boxes that Marcus Freeman would want to check, and then some that I think would be even above and beyond his list? Like, the Cincinnati connections, the fact that he's worked with Gaudioli and Mike Brown and Mike Mickens and Al Washington, I believe, like two, obviously with Freeman.
It would remind me a lot, him going to Notre Dame right now to work for Freeman would remind me a lot of him going to Cincinnati to work for Fickell, who to that point had not, other than an interim stint at Ohio State, had not run a program before.
Pay a lot better.
It would pay a lot better. So Dembrock was essentially demoted in so many words at 16, the way everyone that year was basically fired or demoted.
I've talked to him about it.
By all accounts, in real time, people in the building were like, Matt, this guy's handling this like a champ. Like, he's being a total pro. Yeah. Like, there are people who get fired who don't act professionally about it, understandably so. This guy's a total pro. We're going to help him get to wherever he wants to get. He was in Brian Kelly's wedding. There are photos on Twitter that you can find that Kelly puts out every year on his anniversary. Would you do it if you're him? Is my question.
You know, I think it's, if it wasn't Notre Dame, no. I don't think they'll, if you remove the 10 years at Notre Dame, if you remove the coming from the area, I don't think this, you would do it. Then it would just be Ryan Grubb. It would just be, this is maybe the best guy out there. How does he fit? Maybe it'd be Colin Klein. Maybe it'd be Andy Ludwig. But there's a connection with Dembrock, both to Freeman and I think maybe as importantly to Notre Dame, that I think is a real thing. And it's not just one of those like pie in the sky coaching candidate lists where like one time he went to summer camp in Mishawaka and it's always tugged at his heartstrings. Like Dembrock worked at Notre Dame for 10 years and he's from the area roughly across the Michigan border. Like that's real stuff. So I think that actually is relevant to what may happen here.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak for him, but I would say in that business, you're always looking at your clock, right? And you're going into year three at an SEC program where it's national title or bust. And you just lost three games with one of the best players, probably the best player you've had since Joe Burrow. What's going to be your realistic expectation / feasible long-term path there, especially in next year's SEC that brings in Texas and Oklahoma as well versus, hey, I can go back to the place I know as well as anyone and as anywhere and maybe do for them what I did for LSU. I'm not saying Riley Leonard's going to win the Heisman, but make the playoff, maybe win a playoff game and take those necessary next steps that Notre Dame needs to take to get closer to winning a national championship. So it makes sense to me. I think there are a lot of logistics in the way of it right now. Not that they can't be figured out by both sides, but look, if he didn't just sign this 3-year deal, I'd be like, yep, go get Dembrock. Like you can probably get him. He should be your guy. Who are some other names you like? I mean, Grubb's one that would be a home run. I'm not saying it won't happen, but I don't have any reason to think it would happen, especially with the timeline right now. I don't think Grubb would be, I don't know.
They've got a game to play. That's, I think,
what I'm saying. Like you see guys do that when they're taking head coaching jobs, you don't see them do it for essentially lateral moves, fellow OC positions. I think Alex Atkins, I think, is a really great name and coach. I'm a little surprised he didn't get deeper looks at head jobs this cycle, whether it was Duke or Tulane. Southside Chicago guy, spent with Mike Norvell a while. I mean, offensive line guy, like just, you think of Mike Norvell, you think of like high-flying passing attacks, flash, like Alex Atkins, the way he has rebuilt that line. I mean, that was a broken program, and the crux of that break, so to speak, was the offensive line. I mean, they gave up 48 sacks in 2019, the year before Norvell and Atkins got there. They've given up just 44 in the past 2 years combined. They went undefeated this year with a tough non-conference schedule. That being said, the guy I don't believe has called a play before, and I think you need someone a little more experienced right now, kind of like you've got that Al Golden on defense. You need someone similar on offense, and Dembrock fits that mold, even more so on offense, I would say, because you don't have a defensive mind, or you do have a defensive mind, a head coach. And therefore, I think you might need to prioritize things a little bit differently. Although I will say, whether it's Lincoln Riley with defense last year or Marcus Freeman with offense this year, you name it, Kirby Smart with offense when he got started, I'm very much over the like like, you're the head coach. You're the head coach of both sides of the ball. I don't like, I'm very much over the, like, oh, you know, it's Alex Grinch's defense. No, it's Lincoln Riley's defense. You know, it's Kirby Smart's offense. Right. No, or it's, you know, whoever their OC was before Monken. Like, no, it's Kirby Smart's offense. Like, you're a head coach. You make the hires. You oversee the guys. They run what you tell them to run. We're going into year three now, the Marcus Freeman era. And I'm not saying that wasn't the case these past 2 years with Parker and Reese, but I don't subscribe to the notion of, you know, well, this guy will have more autonomy because Freeman's more concerned with the defensive end. I don't believe in that philosophy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I look, Freeman.
By the way, Brian Kelly was a defensive guy when he got started too.
Right. And Mike Denbrock has also been a defense coordinator.
I did not just know that.
Grand Valley State. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
way back in the day. It's I agree with you. But with Freeman, at least when Reese was here, I mean, Freeman would sit in meetings, but just to observe and listen. But it's like, that doesn't mean Freeman doesn't have the right or autonomy to be like, no, I want to run the ball more, or like, I want to have more of a deep shot part of my pass game. That's fine. But I think Freeman does a pretty good job of staying in his lane and like not trying to pretend like he knows stuff that he doesn't know. A guy that's really interesting to me, and this is, you know, I watched a little bit of Missouri this year. They were fun. But this is more based on talking to other coaches in college football, is Kirby Moore. And he's only been an OC at the Power 5 level for 1 year. It's been this year.
Yep.
He was at Fresno before that. Kellen Moore, who's with the Chargers, is his older brother, former Boise State quarterback. I really like what they do. I think there's a lot of pre-snap motion, which is something that I don't think Parker got into a ton. And they did it with like kind of an interesting group of skilled talent. I mean, I know they had Luther Burden, who was a five-star prospect coming out of high school, but their running back was a former walk-on who transferred in from Valdosta State, maybe?
I didn't know that. I know he finished in the top 10 of the Heisman voting and really was on a tear at the end of the year, but
yeah, it's, yeah. He transferred in from a Division II school. So it's just like, it's not like he's got a ton of material there that, you know, it just is, he was overwhelming with material. I mean, and they had, I think, Theo Weiss, the transfer from Oklahoma, who was there, Truman State, I'm sorry, is where Schrader played before.
Truman State?
Truman,
you just made that up.
No, I did not. It's Truman State.
Where is it?
I don't know. It's probably in Alabama.
Truman.
It just like, I just like what they did and like winning. I think they only had one win against a ranked team, which was number 25 Tennessee. But they gave LSU everything, and they blew that LSU game. Like they lost it on like a full start snap over the head or something.
They gave Georgia the best game anyone's given Georgia, I think, this year outside of Alabama.
So I just think that what he did in his 1 year there is remarkable. You know, I know Charlie Weiss Jr. or Charlie Weiss is Charlie Weiss Sr. would have us just refer to him as, is like the name there is kind of like people raise their eyebrow a little bit, but he's been at Ole Miss for 2 years. A year ago, they had the number three rushing offense in the country behind Air Force and Army. This year, they had, I think, a top 15 pass efficiency offense. So I think they've won 10 games both years, or maybe they were at 9-3.
Won 10 this year.
Yeah, they definitely won 10 this year.
Losses were to Georgia and Alabama.
I just think that Weiss has already shown he can win in different ways. One of the ways you win to get Marcus Freeman's attention has to be creativity on the ground. And Weiss has shown an ability to carve out an effective run game there. So those would be the two younger guys. And it's weird because we talked about this before hit record. Like I really like Mike Denbrock for this job for Marcus Freeman. If Brian Kelly was still the coach, I think I would lean more towards Kirby Moore for Brian Kelly, somebody who was pushing the envelope a little bit more, that when they got into some trouble, would have an experienced head coach who's been around the block, would be like, all right, calm down. We got this. Here's you. This is where we went awry on A. We'll do B, C, and D to fix it. Whereas I think with Denbrock, you sort of need him as the experienced hand with a younger head coach to sort of have that information flow run in reverse. So it's it would be bold if Freeman went young at offensive coordinator, especially after having, I mean, Reese, I think, is a unique character in this because he was young and inexperienced. I also think he's like a borderline football genius. Weiss and Moore, I don't know enough to say it that they would be at that level. So I think an experienced guy for Freeman might be better.
Don't know enough. I would guess Weiss. I mean, just if you're a coach's kid, you're kind of raised around that. You know, you're.
Yeah, he could. Like, I mean, he's got a lot of Reese similarities to him.
And I don't know Charlie Jr. I don't want to project here, but like, you grow up in South Bend with what he had to deal with the spotlight, mostly negative on his father, and you say, I want to do that for a living. Like, you're a football junkie, man. Like, oh, yeah. There's no questioning your desire to succeed in this business. And even though he's only 30, he's got 6 years of OC experience. He's won in a variety of different ways at Ole Miss, a place that frankly doesn't, I mean, we're used to the Ole Miss of Hugh Freeze and Lane Kiffin, and we think of them as a team that, you know, gives Alabama a good game every year. Like, Ole Miss is not traditionally that program. They've only been that way this era. And he's done a really, really good job. Everything you said about Kirby Moore, I agree. I think he's a little green, but, you know, he came from that Kalen DeBoer tree, which is going to have a lot of branches in the near future as far as future head coaches. And he won and in some ways saved that Mizzou team. It wasn't just him, but like, Eli Drinkwitz was teetering on the hot seat entering this season. And they should have gone 11-1. I mean, they had a great season. They're playing Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl this year, and Kirby Moore was a big reason for that. And they did it in a number of different ways. And by the way, while you were talking about this, I looked at it's Truman State University. Apologies. Kirksville, Missouri. Want to take a guess who it's named after?
Harry S. Truman.
Correct.
So is it's there not another Truman?
It's not in Truman. It's just named after him. So yeah, there's that.
Tell I've been helping my 13-year-old study for her U.S. history midterm. I've got Harry Truman on the brain. So
one of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit.
One other name I think is interesting, and he is available. I don't think he would move the needle as far as splashy hire, but I think when you look under the hood, he's done a lot of interesting and successful things as Slade Nagel. He was only officially the offense coordinator at Tulane this year. They made the AAC title game again. They lost to SMU. He was officially the tight ends coach, I think, in 2022. But by all accounts, he was the one calling the plays on that offense, which won the league, won the Cotton Bowl. And had, I mean, they're 23-4 the past 2 years. He's available. He did not go with Willie Fritz to Houston. He was also a guy I believe was in the running for the Alabama OC job last year as well with Nick Saban. I think.
Yeah, and I feel like his name was sort of a fringe Notre Dame, like
last year,
maybe more as like this guy's interesting, but I don't remember there ever being like serious contact with him.
Same. And when putting together my list, I went back and forth of like, how much do I want to recycle guys from last year? Right. Like, not going to put any Ludwig on there, although I don't think he was on ours to begin with last year. No. There are like Paul Chris, I put on again. He's an analyst now at Texas. By all accounts, seems to be loving it there. And what's not to love? Live in Austin, don't recruit and make the playoff your first year there. But he's a guy who runs a pro style system, always gets the absolute most out of his quarterbacks. May or may not have been involved last year. I'm not sure. I know we talked about him a little bit when that job opened. But I do know he was involved with the Indiana head coaching job this year before pulling himself out of it. So I think he's a guy who would probably have some interest if Notre Dame went that way. And a little bit like Al Golden, right? Like the been there, done that head coach, left his last job kind of on a sour ending, but is a pro's pro, knows how to get stuff done, knows how to run a building, and knows how to coach quarterbacks well. You would probably be sacrificing some stuff on the recruiting front there that ended up being his undoing at Wisconsin as a head coach. But I think he's a guy who, if there's mutual interest, I'd say a little bit like Denbrock without the Notre Dame connections, although there are some connections for him there. His brother Rick played baseball there. Was a former MAC commissioner. I could see that being in play if both sides think that's something they're both interested in.
I figured that he would end up at Iowa at some point.
That's, I mean, which, that seems which more like
does make Brian Ferentz available for all Notre Dame hot lists.
He's really Kirk Ferentz today, by the way. Go on Twitter and see this clip. He went on some rambling. I wouldn't even say rant because he was kind of casual about it all, but he ripped, Phil Longo in Wisconsin and absolutely tortured Lincoln Riley and USC about some of those guys' philosophies when it comes to offense and their ignorance toward defense. Go look that up while you have a minute. I've seen salty Kirk Ferentz. This one was like, okay, where'd that one come from? but I could easily see Paul Chris being involved with that job. I could see him being a better fit with that job because Wisconsin and Iowa have a lot more similarities than Notre Dame does with either of those two schools. But again, that's a name that I think if there's interest, you got to pick up the phone and see what his price is, so to speak, because I think his next move is being a Power 5 OC or a MAC head coach.
Yeah, I can see that.
That reminds me one other name I want to say I did not have on my list that I printed, but I do wonder if you might have a chance at Jason Candle right now because
he's on mine. Yeah, I just like again, it's highly professional. Experienced, has seen some stuff. Hell, I mean, he almost won a game at Notre Dame a few years ago.
That's right.
Yeah, it just, I think he would be somebody, wasn't that against Marcus Freeman as well? Was that the...
As a DC, right?
Yeah, not as head coach.
His home opener is DC.
So, yeah, I mean, that was one that would be interesting to me. And like, look, I think we all put Sean Lewis, who was a name on all of our lists last year, not on our list this year because he went to Colorado and now San Diego State. Like it's not. And I think earlier in the show, you mentioned like, look, what's happening to Notre Dame OCs? Like what jobs are they getting or Notre Dame DCs? Like they all have a chance to be head coaches. And then some of them go straight to the Power 5 level. Jason Candle already has done the MAC level job. I think since 2016, was that his first season there?
He's been there a while. He's interviewed for a lot of Power 5 jobs. It has not gone his way. From my understanding, he hasn't wowed anyone in the interview process, but I think interviewing to be a head coach at a Power 5 job is different than interviewing to be the head coach, or excuse me, to be the OC at a job like ND.
Right.
And I mean,
yeah, it was like much different.
More money.
Being yeah, able, you, may, you, will you get a raise. Money.
You restart your clock.
You get a better chance to get a head coaching job, I think.
He just lost his quarterback to Baylor, Daquan Finn.
Yep.
Won MAC MVP this year. He's a really good coach. I think he's about the right things. I think he's a really good culture builder at Toledo. I know they lost to to Miami, Ohio in the MAC title game this year, but like Toledo's the program in the MAC right now, and they're set up to succeed for a while. But much like Chuck Martin, rarely do you see guys last that long at the MAC. It's almost hard to last that long because you're either gone,
then you have a good season,
or you get fired because you're going 500 every year. And it's really hard to just keep that level of consistency up over a decade span in that league where everyone is, the margin for error is really, really small. So I think that would be worth a call. I know Miami brought him in for an interview 2 years ago to be the OC, and be interesting to see the revisionist history on Candle's career with that, although he's had his probably his two best Toledo teams since turning down Miami 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I think that's another one. I think he's 45, 46. He's not the youngest guy in the world. But
I don't even know if he's that old.
He's a seasoned pro. He was really good at quarterbacks, really good calling plays.
Those things are important. I think we'd be missing the boat if we didn't mention Gino Guidulli here, even though I think both of us believe it will be an external hire, just based on, you know, what sources told me today. But to be fair, a year ago, we thought the same thing based on what sources told us back then, that they weren't going to go internal, and they ended up going with Jared Parker. If they hired Gino Guidulli, it would reconfigure the staff where your OC would be your quarterback's coach, which I think is generally easier than sort of the tight ends mode they've been in. I do think it would maybe undo some of the Freeman resetting of the clock element there, though, because it feels like maybe it would be an extension of what you were already doing opposed to something new. But it certainly, if there is going to be an in-house promotion, it would have to be Guidulli. After all, he's going to be promoted to be OC. They announced he's calling plays for the bowl game. So that's not an audition in my mind for anything, because it's the Sun Bowl and both rosters are decimated, most notably Oregon State's defense and Notre Dame's offense. So it doesn't strike me as something where you're going to have it be a test run, maybe similar to how Tommy Reese was in the Camping World Bowl in 2018. But that would have to be the guy. I'm not sure how that would sell, but you know, Guidulli was OC at Cincinnati for a year, involved somewhat in play calling last year. I'm not sure if that ebbed and flowed during the course of the season as things struggled.
I believe he was a finalist for the Western Michigan head job last year too.
That went to Lance Taylor.
Yeah.
So he's definitely a capable coach. I'm not sure if that's the right hire at the right time for Notre Dame, but if they get in a weird spot, which look, they got in a weird spot last year, you could see where that could end up with Guidulli.
I wonder if, because you already have a quarterback's coach on staff, and I hate to use the word risk here, but like, could you hire an Alex Atkins then, whose bread and butter is not necessarily the quarterbacks, but everything other, like, is there an opportunity to work in concert with the quarterback's coach on staff? I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic. Most places, Notre Dame usually too, has their OC as their quarterback's coach. That's not the case right now. So I'll be curious. You know, Mike Brown's in the mix now, right? Like, you just hired someone else new to that staff immediately after Chancey Stuckey was fired. So there are a lot of moving parts there. And let's face it, it's only December 18th. NFL cycle is not even, I mean, firings have begun, but the hirings are far from getting started. Would not surprise either of us if Al Golden was NFL DC next year, and we're having the same conversation about who's calling the defense next year for Notre Dame. I wondered, I'm going through some of the best offenses and best teams in college football this year. I'm like, could Notre Dame swing a Sean Moore? Probably not, because that guy's probably in line to succeed Jim Harbaugh, assuming Harbaugh leaves for the NFL and assuming he's hireable, because there's still a lot of stuff that needs to be settled with that entire Michigan situation right now. But the guy was a Broyles Award finalist for a reason. And he completely outcoached Ryan Day in the game this year, which is very, very impressive.
I hadn't really thought much about Alex Atkins. That would be the most outside the box hire of all of them. Would you agree with that? Like, there's not really a connection. You've got to reshuffle duties on the staff, I would think.
Midwest guy. Okay. I don't know if you need reshuffle duties. If he's just OC.
Give him tight ends.
Sure. Yeah, I forgot Parker was tight ends too.
Yeah, it's like a position I think people thought it coached itself, but
because it kind of has at Notre Dame the last
few years. So yeah, I go back to Chancey.
I guess Dembrock was
Jared Parker inherited these coach. Greek gods. Like, yeah, it,
I think Dembrock was tight ends coach my first year covering them. If I'm not mistaken.
He was. I want to say he coached tight ends and offensive tackles, maybe at the same time. Like I remember they had a offensive line coach named John McDonnell, who was like guards and centers coach, which I've never heard of before.
That was not when I was covering them.
No, this was long before. I think you were 12 years old back then. This is like when Ryan Harris was on the team. Brady Quinn was
Ryan is not that much older than me.
No, but yeah, it was just he's done a little bit of everything. He's been a good soldier in multiple ways. Duties, titles, roles, all that stuff. So I think that'd be a fairly well-received hire. Notre Dame is probably going to hire a strength coach real soon. Lauren Landau, formerly of the Denver Broncos. I don't know how familiar you are with him. I've dug into him a little bit today.
Same.
Never coached in college, which I think is a little bit like, okay, there's going to be a learning curve there. Before the Parker stuff was happening, I was knee deep in an hour long podcast that he gave about his time with the Broncos and coaching philosophy with strength training, which I found pretty interesting, and I had to abandon it, but did not strike me as sort of like an old school strength coach in any way. Much more professional in terms of the private training aspects that he did. He was in the private sector for a long time.
I think he still has some practice.
That may go away now, or at least be put on hold. But lo and behold, one of the people he worked with was Ryan Harris.
I was just going to ask, was he?
And I texted Ryan, who I think, God bless him, is skiing in Colorado right now or somewhere out west. It was just like, he's said, great guy. And his quote was, he made me a champion. So that was sort of his private trainer when he was with the Broncos. But obviously he is long since retired when Landau was the Broncos strength coach, which I think he had four head coaches in 5 years. I don't know how much you can read into that. But listening to Landau's interview, I thought it was interesting to talk about how much he didn't know when he went from the private sector to an NFL team. I think that there will be quite a learning adjustment when he gets to Notre Dame. If that comes through to fruition, because there's just the calendar, the contact periods, how much you can be with the guys, how much you can't, all that is we've mentioned this before, like trying to explain college football to someone who doesn't follow college football, they look at you like you have four heads. Like it just, that sport doesn't make any sense at all.
It does not. By the way, can I just say, and someone texted me this today saying they were getting Jimmy Clausen flashbacks. Dylan Raiola, some good old fashioned traditional national signing day drama flipping from Georgia to Nebraska. And did you see his announcement?
The poem?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It read like an English assignment.
I got a text today. It was like, I'm getting Jimmy Clausen committing to Notre Dame at the Hall of Fame vibes right now. And this is going to either be the greatest thing to ever happen in Nebraska or the biggest nightmare ever. But it just like, it felt like it used to feel with like high school prospects having their moment, probably too big for them, and having a traditional signing day flip. Because as you just said, trying to explain college football to anyone, Jared Parker, welcome to Troy. You have a signing class. You got to get in Wednesday. Oh, and by the way, your intro press conference is Tuesday. It doesn't make sense at all.
Godspeed to you. Oh, funny small world. I was looking at Alex Adkins' bio, and his first jobs were at UT Martin, where he worked with Jared Parker.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I knew he went there. Yeah. I know he worked with them.
I think I wrote a little bit about Jess Simpson, who's the head coach down there. It's like he's got this funky coaching tree that has really put out a lot of higher end Power Five guys, but
they were always very involved in like Southside Catholic League Chicago for whatever reason. It just felt like UT Martin, and Alex Atkins is Southside Chicago guy. Wanted to go over this real quick because we keep mentioning it, but just to like bring the point full circle. Since Brian Kelly took over at Notre Dame, here are the offensive coordinators and what's happened to each of them since. Charlie Molinar went from doing whatever it was he did at Notre Dame to become the UMass head coach. Chuck Martin became the Miami, Ohio head coach. Mike Denbrock got demoted, ended up at Cincinnati, made the playoff, then ended up at LSU, where he just had the Heisman winner, and we'll see what happens after this. Mike Sanford, OC on a 4-8 team that he didn't even call the plays on. I believe Denbrock actually called the plays on 16. Yeah. And Sanford got the Western Kentucky head job. Chip Long got fired and has since been at Tennessee, Tulane, Georgia Tech, Louisville, and now Southern Miss's new offense coordinator with,
where I believe, his old match up against Jared Parker next year.
There you go.
Troy versus Southern Miss.
So Notre Dame really in the ACC, the SEC, and now the Sun Belt. Yeah. It's got like all the OCs.
Yeah, it's like I was a little more interested in Jared Parker versus Colin Klein in the opener next year than I am than in Jared Parker versus Chip Long and I think in a late November Sun Belt game, but I'll take it. I'll take it.
Yeah, actually no, the ACC, they're all gone now. McNulty went with Reese to
He's at Alabama, yeah.
Chip's gone. Yeah. Lance Taylor's got a head job. Tommy Reese went to Alabama OC job, and Jared Parker went to the Troy head job. And to put a bow on Notre Dame's offense this year, because there are a lot of different ways to look at it. In fairness, 39.1 points per game, number 8 nationally, number 2 in school history behind the famous 1912 team that averaged 48.6 points per game. We all remember that. 6.95 yards per play, number 10 nationally. Just behind, this is a stat that has not been kept track of for hundreds of years, but just behind the modern record set by the 2015 team of 7.02 yards per play. So, yes, there were some things to love about this offense.
No, yeah, worked out.
That's right, he was. There were some things to love about this offense, but I think anyone who saw the Clemson game, the Louisville game, the Duke game, for the most part, came away scratching their heads wondering where
Ohio State somewhat.
Yeah, Ohio State somewhat too. Candidly, I think Notre Dame got very, very lucky with this one. I think Marcus Freeman got lucky with this one. The same line of thinking where you were saying, you know, you probably don't hire Gino Baduli because you want to restart your clock, for lack of a better term. Like, yes, you have a chance here to, let's face it, you have the chance to make an offensive coordinator hire. And I go, this is your third one in 3 years, but Tommy Reese was foisted onto you. And in many ways, Jared Parker was too. Because of the disaster that search was. Like, you had no other option. So here's a chance to spread your wings, go out there, make a splashy hire, and go into the 12-team playoff era thinking you're not only going to make it, but maybe make a run in it.
Yeah, that should be the goal now. I think in the past...
It's got to be the goal. Like, I know you always say... Not just you, but you're on this podcast. Like, go say, I hate college football right now, where it's playoff or bust. Well, if it's not that,
it's going to be. Why,
but it already is. The entire freaking roster opted out of this game. Like,
yeah,
it is.
No, I'm just saying. My view was like, if Notre Dame didn't make the 4-team playoff, it wasn't automatically a bad season. If you don't make the 12-team playoff, it is.
I agree.
Like it readjusts what the line of demarcation between good season, bad season. Is now quite clear, whereas before I feel like it's been quite fuzzy.
I agree in principle, but it's hard for me to say, and you know, maybe New Year's Six. Well, no, actually, New Year's Six bowls are not different because they've had they had opt outs for the Fiesta Bowl. I don't mean to be one of those like old man yellow cloud things, but if everyone's opting out of the game, you can't tell me this season and this game is important and successful. Like, I just can't. I can't subscribe to that.
Notre Dame went 9-3 this season. There will be another game that they play in El Paso on December 29th, and then the offseason will start.
But the Damian Martinez saga has taken a couple twists and turns.
So he's back in, but then I thought that I was reading he's injured. Okay, yeah, I don't.
Oh, is he injured? I just saw he's not.
I don't know. It's very confusing. It's like you've got a new head coach who's not coaching the team there. They have all these opt outs. Notre Dame has all these opt outs. You fired your receivers coach. You hired a new one who's coaching for the bowl game. Your offensive coordinator just left. It's just not a
backup quarterback. Yeah, with an interim play caller.
It's a game to be played, and I love college football, so I'll watch it. I would watch it if I wasn't paid to watch it. I don't know if I'd go to El Paso, but it. I mean,
we missed a hell of a famous toastery bowl today on my flight. So I've heard 28-0 comeback.
It just like it's a college football game that will be fun to watch and interesting, and there will be a lot of storylines. I just don't think it has a whole lot to do with the season that just finished, nor do I think it has a whole lot to do with the season's going to start in full in the offseason a couple weeks from now.
I agree completely. I don't think that would change whether if they were in the Duke's Mayo Bowl or, you know, or in a higher tier bowl game. Like, I think it'd be the exact same.
Yeah. It's like if Notre Dame drew Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl or something, like, Ohio State's a bad example. Let's say they got Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl. This is like a team they haven't played this year.
If Bo Nix plays.
If Bo Nix played, like, that would be interesting. I think that would be an indicative of like how good Notre Dame was this season. Cause I think that Notre Dame would have more players play in that game. Maybe not everybody. You know, when they had Kyle Hamilton, Kyron Williams opt out, that was the Fiesta Bowl.
Right.
But I just think it would have more of an attachment to the season that had just finished. And so it would be more relevant or informative about that season than what this game just sort of feels lost in space to me.
I mean, it'd be more exciting. Well,
oh yeah.
Oregon State, but
I'd be going to Scottsdale, not El Paso.
I don't know if we'd see fewer opt-outs. Maybe we would.
We would I guarantee we would see fewer, which is different than saying we would see none. You know?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I thought Freeman's comments about Hartman were right up to the line, as close a line as we've ever seen Marcus Freeman like publicly express.
Because I have a growing frustration about coaches who can't just like show some spine in that instance where they're just like, you know what?
Well, you covered Brian Kelly for 12 years.
Why do we have to kowtow to the players as if we say something critical would be used against us in recruiting, which is like, it's not true. I appreciated the way Marcus Freeman handled that.
I did too.
Sometimes coaches, it's just like a little bit of word salad-y and like, what are you saying? Does that mean anything? But I feel like Marcus Freeman showed, you know, some teeth there in terms of saying like, you'd have to ask Sam. I mean, it wasn't quite the level of Brian Kelly with Dane Crist about his confidence level after the USC game in 2011 when we asked.
That's my question. My question.
We asked like, hey, how was Brian? Was that your question?
Yeah.
That was a great teleconference. That was a great moment in teleconference history where, yeah, Matt asked Brian Kelly, does Dane Crist have to worry about his confidence after the fumble? And Brian Kelly's response, without missing a beat, I don't have to worry about it. He does. You're like, okay, that's the end of Dane Crist's career right there. It's okay to be critical of a player for opting out without throwing them under the bus, which I thought Marcus Freeman like threaded that needle over the weekend because, I mean, yeah, look, also Sam Hartman, he made a lot of money last year off of Notre Dame and sort of like I'm waving my arms, the grand Notre Dame, the royal Notre Dame. I think it's okay to sort of treat people differently if they're making that much than just
3 years older than several.
Ramon Henderson who opts out to go find a new transfer destination. Like that's totally different to me than Sam Hartman, who was voted a captain.
They made up for it. They gave him the team MVP award. Huh?
Oh, I say that Notre Dame named new captains for the summer.
No. I'm saying they gave him the team MVP award on the.
Yeah. Twitter. I don't understand that actually did not make any sense to me either.
Bigger snub. Audric Estime not being a Doak Walker finalist or again snubbed by his own team, him and Joe Alt in favor of a quarterback who turned the ball over 12 times this year.
Right. Yeah. That didn't make any sense. But yeah, Notre Dame's captains for the bowl game, JD Bertrand, the one returning captain. I think it makes him a 3-time captain now. Milk Vinson. I'm blanking on.
John Baptiste and. DJ Brown.
DJ Brown, right. But I wanted to mention Javonte Jean-Baptiste last because there was kind of one of those anonymous Twitter accounts that posts like, player X is opting out of the bowl game, according to my sources. And they posted that Javonte Jean-Baptiste was opting out of the bowl game.
Oh, is that what that was in response
to? Yes.
I didn't see the original. I saw his tweet. I was like, it's funny, but I don't know what it's in response to.
Yeah, so he replied to that original tweet, I think with like a emoji face, like, huh, question mark, or like curious face, hand on chin. And then when he quote tweeted Notre Dame's announcement today with like, my sources says he's playing, I just thought that was, I felt bad because I have not been able to get to know him at all. And he seems like he'd probably be a fun person to get to know based on his social media behavior.
I'm glad we have clarity on that. I'm glad he better play now, because we've seen a couple instances of those that have kind of backfired. Like the Hawaii quarterback, Pete Nakos from On3, tweeted the Hawaii quarterback, I forget his name, was going to go to the portal. And Timmy Chang quote tweeted him and said, he just told me on the phone that's not true. And then he wrote, not cool Pete, in the tweet, like really denigrating to Pete Nakos. And then a week later, Pete Thamel tweeted he actually was going to the portal. And I was like, someone needs to tweet not cool Pete to the other Pete now, since he's got it on. And Timmy Chang, who I like a lot, completely whiffed on this one. Can we go back to the calendar for a second? It just makes no sense. And by the way, we'll be preparing for a playoff game this week.
That was my question to Marcus Freeman on Saturday. I was just like, okay, here we got. We got coaching staff. We got recruiting. We got portal out, portal in, NFL draft. And you're going to prepare for a playoff game next year? How is that supposed to work? And he laughed. But like, I have no freaking idea how this is supposed to work next year. During finals exams, by the way. Like, we talk about the midterm curse at Notre Dame.
It's funny because, like,
final exam curse, like, good God.
It wasn't that long ago where it was like a bowl game was a reward for a season. You get to go to this exotic location and spend the week in San Diego or New York and Christmas or whatever.
El Paso.
And I'm watching the Gronk Bowl Saturday night. And the whole talk is, boy, UCLA really lucked out in the LA Bowl. They had finals this week. They got to sleep in their own beds. They're closer to campus now than they are in their home games at the Rose Bowl. I'm like, so everything you've been telling us about how special bowl games are, like, it's a complete opposite for this one, I guess.
That may be a function of where your campus is located at this time of year.
It is, but it's like, it's just the, everything we've been sold about the sport from the people in charge of it over the last like 150 years or so, it's just been like utter and complete BS. How a playoff will ruin things. NIL is going to ruin things. Have you seen the top 10 five stars? They're recruited to 10 different schools right now.
Yeah.
Like, things are evening out.
We've already gone over Dominic Raiola's poem. Like, it's
ratings are through the roof. This is the most watched college football season in years.
I don't want to we can wrap up here, but are you surprised at all, like, how much more interesting the sport is outside of like the hardcore college football fan due to the portal and NIL? Because I feel like it's actually enhanced interest in the sport, not diminished it, even though I think it's frustrated a lot of like hardcore fans.
I think it's turned it to more of a 12-month a year sport. So in that regard, yeah. Like, it's a little like the NBA. Like, the NBA is not the most popular sport, but they know how to own the calendar with off-season drama. And I think college football is probably number two in that regard. I mean, outside of Shohei Ohtani, baseball can't move the needle with stars, right? Like, I think Connor Stallions is probably a more popular name in random households across America than 99% of
Major League Baseball players. No one's dressing up as Shohei Ohtani for Halloween.
Got to be a pitcher and a hitter. That would be tough. But yeah, I think the combination of that, the combination of, this is unique to this year, but the Deion Sanders effect, I think, is real. Mm-hmm. I think you had a lot of people watching the sport that otherwise weren't. And you're seeing, not to go too far off the ledge here, but like, you're seeing that in the NFL now with the Taylor Swift effect. Like, yeah, there are a lot of people, like, I got such a kick out of, I want to say it was Entertainment Tonight or something. It was like, sources say Travis Kelce was not at Taylor Swift's birthday party because there are practices for games, which are usually held on Sundays, and they're really important to prepare for. It's like, you got it. I got scooped on this one.
Oh, God. That's good times. College football definitely has Deion Sanders kind of like a third rail interest, I think, to the sport, brought people in who weren't paying attention otherwise. Like, it's helpful. I thought Marcus Freeman actually made a really good point on game day when every head coach was being asked about Deion Sanders. And the point was, like, if you're bringing more people to the tent, more people to the party, yeah, like, that's awesome. It's awesome for everybody. You might do it differently than I do it, but like, that's good for the sport.
To a lesser extent, a much lesser extent, but still in his own kind of stratosphere, I think Jim Harbaugh, at least when they're winning, is similar.
Yeah.
As far as just one of one character, legendary player, people who don't follow college football, good or bad, with what's going on there this year, are really into the Michigan story right now. And because he's the face of it, that helps.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, before we get into more Jim Harbaugh, Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce talk, maybe Indiana. That's a good time to wrap up The Athletic. This a mildly emergency podcast here on Monday, wrapping up at 11:15 p.m.
I think you just said wrap up The Athletic, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Did I? Yeah, we don't want to do that. Sorry, that sounds a bit ominous. Wrapping up this episode of The Independent at 11:15 p.m. on a Monday night, following the news of Jared Parker to Troy. Talk a little strength and conditioning, a little Sun Bowl. My credentials got approved today, which is exciting. Be heading down to El Paso. So we're doing.
Sources say you will not be opting out of covering
this. No, game. I will not be opting out of this game. If there's any more emergency news this week, we'll get into that. And frankly, on Tuesday, by the time you listen to this podcast, I will have already watched practice and had interviews with players, including Steve Angeli and Charles Jagasaw, two of Notre Dame's new starters in the bowl game. Signing day is Wednesday. Don't forget about that.
Parker's press conference is Tuesday at Troy.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot happening on this holiday week. So we'll be back. Maybe we'll do a show at the end of this week to sort of wrap up the latest stuff, because things seem to be happening rather quickly. Then, of course, we'll be back to preview the Sun Bowl or whatever that is. Is it opt-outs and injuries and coaching changes continue to rack up? And then, yeah, it should be a fun week down there. So until we probably talk to you at the end of this week, he's Matt from the Inside Zone. I'm Pete Sampson from The Athletic. And you've been listening to The Independent. Thanks for being with us. Mm-hmm.